Well, good afternoon, everyone. I appreciate the fact that you guys are sticking around for this late session, and I'm interrupting your beer time, so I'll make sure we spend it wisely so we can go back and have refills later. My name is Craig McClanahan. I'm a principal software engineer at Jive. I've been with Jive now just over 9 months, and that makes me almost one of the old-timers because we've been growing pretty quickly. So what we're going to talk about today is We've talked all day, if you've been following this track, about Jive applications. Now we're going to see, well, how do they fit into the context of an enterprise? How can I go beyond just talking to the Jive instance I'm connected to talk to all of the enterprise services and the cloud services that I might need? So we'll talk a little bit about the context of this, and then we're actually going to walk through in my demo app. We'll actually install it from scratch, and then we'll dive into the code and see how it was actually built once we've looked at what the APIs are actually like. And we'll end up with a preview of coming attractions. And I'm not making any promises. I'm not the product manager. But these are things that are on my radar and now on Jive's radar as things we want to add to the base Connects functionality as we move forwards towards the 5.0 release. So the background, so we've got these Jive apps that we want to run. And we want them to be able to do something interesting. And that's not useful. We've got enterprise applications and cloud services that we want to talk to. So we want to install in the middle Jive API and Jive Connects. Can we adjust it's still cutting off. We want to connect the apps to the cloud services and to the on-premise enterprise systems that we all have to deal with, and all on the way actually make the programming challenges a little bit easier for the developer, and knowing that the developer could be you guys or us that is writing an app that I'm going to sell into this enterprise marketplace. It could be a developer inside the IT organization that is wanting to connect to proprietary systems inside that company. So at its base, as we've learned, a Jive application is an open social gadget. And just out of curiosity, has anyone here ever written an open social gadget or a Google gadget? At least a couple have. Yeah. So it's a standard API that lets us write an application in JavaScript, CSS, and HTML that runs, its guts runs inside the browser. And that means that we have to run inside the browser sandbox. So normally, I can only go back to the server I got my JavaScript from in order to make network calls. And that's not very helpful because I'm typically not going to have all of my enterprise services I want to connect to on that box. I need some sort of a proxying mechanism. So one of the first things that OpenSocial standardized in the original 0.8 release was this call called gadgets.io.makeRequest. So kind of wordy and clunky to actually make that sort of a call because you got to fold together a whole bunch of parameters into a structure. And then I call the example service, and then I pass it a callback function that is going to get control when the IO completes, and then I can pass it the parameters that I built up. Well, in the later version of OpenSocial, they standardize a much more fluent programming style. All of the calls are osapi.http. And then the method name is the verb that you want to use. So in this particular case, we're going to do a get against that absolute URL. I want JSON output because that's what my service provides, and I want to use OAuth signed authentication to take care of all of that for me. So the idea now is the get method returns a request object that has a method called execute on it, and I can pass, again, my callback function to the execute method. So this is a real common design pattern that we'll see all the way through the osapi.http. And because we understood that developers will need to be familiar with this API anyway, we purposely modeled the Jive Connects APIs to have the same programming style. So if you're used to this, then you're going to get it right away. So there's a method for each verb. It takes a params object that can pass request parameters, returns an object of type request that has the execute method that I pass my callback to. And we'll see exactly that pattern when we look at the Connects APIs in a few minutes. But OpenSocial doesn't solve a couple of kind of important problems. They leave these as exercises to the application developer. So we're going to look at these two problems from a couple of perspectives. We'll look at it from the developer's perspective, but also from the IT organization that the apps run in, because both perspectives are really important. The first one is that I have to manage in my app the absolute URL of my services. So it means I need a configuration screen and a mechanism. I need to tell my users, you go cut and paste this URL out of some document that describes how to get it. That's not a very nice user experience. And that's especially not nice because that's the very first experience the user has with your application. So why should you have to manage that? Then from the IT department's viewpoint, quite often you're not going to have just one URL. You might have multiple SharePoint servers. You might have a Salesforce.com and another system that I need to get enterprise data from so I can mash it up. So we don't want to have to manage all of these. And so we're going to see how Jive Connects takes care of that problem for us. The other problem is actually a little bit more serious, because nearly all of the services that we're going to connect to require some sort of authentication. And if we were just using OpenSocial directly, we're pretty much leaving the application developer stuck with collecting the user's credentials, trying to figure out how to store them someplace securely. And then again, you have to write the administrative screens at installation time to collect those credentials from the user. Again, it's not a nice user experience for the user. It's also not it's not going to make us popular as application developers for an IT manager who's going to say, you mean I'm going to let a third-party app developer store credentials from my users to my internal systems and not ship them off to a server in Nigeria someplace? So what we'd like with Jive Connects is that the Jive takes care of storing this and the application doesn't ever see it. And also, along the way, for the application developer's benefit, you don't have to deal with the 401s and challenging the user for credentials or anything like that. The framework takes care of all of this for us. So the solution, then, with Jive Connects API comes with three basic pieces. The first is that on your Jive instance, you have a services directory, which is a list of all of the machines, all of the RESTful or SOAP web services that I want to make available to applications that are running on this machine. We have the credentials vault, which stores the user credentials that are necessary for accessing the systems, and that's stored on a per-service, per-user basis. So if I have multiple applications that talk to the same service, then I'm only going to challenge the user for those credentials once, the first time they actually try to use it. And then the third piece of it is a set of client APIs that we'll look at in detail. That's resolution really cut things off. I'm sorry. So the basic flow, kind of two flows in parallel happen. The Jive administrator is adding these services to the service directory and testing the connection, make sure everything is working correctly. One of the things that the service definition includes is what is the authentication scheme that is required. In today's world, which well, we're still in progress, we support HTTP basic and any API that needs an API key on a per user basis. And then we'll be looking at adding additional capabilities in the future. And then from the Jive end user's viewpoint, then they're looking at the app and the application marketplace, choosing which one they want to install. And then as part of the installation process, Jive understands what services are available, what services are being requested by this app, and we'll see how that match is done as you install the process. And then the first time you actually access a particular service, if you haven't entered the credentials yet, well, Jive will challenge the user for the credentials at that point. And that's important because in some cases, the services are actually optional. An application might say, well, if you have a connection to the service, we'll go ahead and use it, but it's not a system requirement. So why ever challenge the user for credentials if you're not going to need it? Excuse me. So let's look a little bit more in detail at how this configuration and installation works. So there's two basic terms that we need to understand. And the first is the service. So let's dive into a little bit more detail about what a service comprised of. So fundamentally, it's an absolute URL that's the base. So the assumption is you're going to be adding path elements on to the end of that service URL, depending on what your service definition is. Of course, if it's a SOAP service, you're probably just going to call the base URL every time. But a typical REST service will have extra parameters that define the resource that you want. We see that we have the authentication style. I can tell the Jive Connects environment, every time I send a request to this service, I want you to add these HTTP headers along with it because my service requires that. So yes, we can let the application developer have to remember that on every call, but it's easier if the service can do it for you, or if Jive Connects can do it for you. And then the last element of a service is a set of tags. So we're all familiar with tags. When we use Flickr, we tag our favorite photos with what they are. Tags in this case are going to be the basis on which we're matching up what an application requires to what's available. And then we'll be managing, as Jive, essentially a registry of the common tags so that an application developer will say, well, if I want to talk to a system that is using an API like CMIS for accessing content management systems, version 1, then this is the tag I should declare that I want to match. And then the Jive administrator, as we'll see, configures all of this in a particular Jive instance in the service directory. So you can think of it as kind of the central phone book or the white pages for all of the services. And then beyond just defining the service, we'll have abilities for you to declare certain users or certain groups of users have access to the service, and then we'll only offer those services that you can have access to when you install an application. So in many cases, the services themselves are restricted to certain user populations, like the HR system might be only accessible to people in the HR department, and we can let that be enforced for us as part of the service definition. So in the Jive admin console, then, we'll define a service something like this. The example I'm going to give us is a sales quotation management system. So you could think of this being a part of your CRM, or it could be running on Salesforce or something like that. So we're defining that this particular service requires HTTP basic authentication. I'm going to describe it so that it shows up in the management reports and so on. And the tag that is declared for this particular service is called quotes. And then the last thing I have to declare is the absolute URL for the beginning of that service, which happens to be running on a system, theoretically, in our sales environment inside of Jive. So the other term we need to know is, now that we've got services defined, is a connection. So a connection is a match of a particular service to a particular element in the application called an alias. Because I can declare in my application I need 3 different services. And so I will identify them in the app when I write it by a simple word, essentially like a tag, that says to me what it is, and then I can refer to my connections internally based on that alias. And then what happens when I use it is I get information about the service that I'm connected to, which was chosen by the user at install time. So this sounds kind of weird. We'll actually walk through the process and it'll become a lot more clear. But one of the things you get at the client API level, along with knowing that you got a connection, is you get information about the service that you're attached to. So let's say if I'm writing a robust content management application that supports CMIS version 1 and CMIS version 2, and I need to adjust my behavior depending on which API the actual server I'm talking to supports, I can do that if I know what tag was matched on the service that I was assigned to, so I know how to adapt my behavior to either kind. So we have access in the API to information about that service. So in a Jive application or a Google gadget or an open social gadget, the way you define that I want to use extra services is a thing called require feature. So the require feature that's in blue here is the entry that says I want to have a connection with an alias of quote. The title quote service is going to show up in the UI as part of the installation. And then the tag I want is quotes. And remember, we very cleverly we tagged our service definition quotes so that that'll match up. This particular application also requires some other features. The OpenSocial 1.0 and dynamic height and views are OpenSocial standard capabilities because we very much want to take advantage of all of the standards that are already happening around OpenSocial. The Jive Open Client, which is going to get renamed essentially Jive Core API, lets you access things inside of your Jive instance. So I can get to the user and to their social graph. I can create documents. I can like things. All of the things you can do through the Jive UI, I can now do through in an application programmatically. And then the last thing I define here is in Jive, you have 2 sizes, essentially, of the user experience of your app. In dashboard mode, it runs in a fairly small box that has got lots of different apps running on the same page. And then so it's fairly constrained. It's 300 or so pixels wide, so you can't display a lot of information in it. But there's a way to switch your your app into what's called canvas mode, which essentially takes all of the screen except for some Chrome at the top and the bottom. And then you can have a much more compelling user interface because you've got a lot more screen real estate. And there's ways that that we'll see in our demo to actually programmatically switch back and forth that, again, is an open social standard thing. So in my particular case, I chose to create two different HTML files for the two views. You can say that a particular HTML file supports both views by saying home comma canvas if you wanted to. But I found it more convenient to just factor them differently because they had somewhat different structures. So at install time then, we match up the services that we saw to the connection requested tags, and three different things can happen. There can be perhaps exactly one match of, there's only one service that I've got defined has that particular tag, then we'll select it automatically for you. As we'll see, the user still has to confirm that it's okay to use that particular service, but we don't have to make any choices. There can be more than one match, so we will list for you all of the available services that have matching tags, and it's up to the user now to look at the description of that service and choose the one that they're trying to use for this particular need. There also could be a scenario where nothing matches, and so the application won't be able to be installed now, and you'll be asked nicely to go talk to your Jive admin about making sure that there's a service available that has the tags that are needed. And again, as we'll see, beyond beyond just selecting the services, you're also, just as you do see on a Facebook environment, if the app requires access to other personal information inside your Jive instance, you have to confirm that that's okay with you as a user. Do you have a question?
Yeah, the question was, so can you skip past this tagging thing, or is it absolutely required?
So the question is, can you skip past the tags thing, or is it absolutely required? In our current design, it is actually required. Yeah, it's effectively very much like a JNDI being an alias, because you as the application developer don't know what environment is going to be there for a particular user of a particular company that's going to use your app. So we have to have some sort of an indirection mechanism to allow you to say concretely, I want the quotes system without knowing what its URL is going to be. So that's why we're doing this matching for us in an indirect fashion. Okay. So this is the sort of a screen that the user will see as they install the app. So we can see that the application has access to certain information that is part of Jive, such as the activity streams and social groups and so on. We also found two different instances of the quotation management system. So this is a particular use case that happens all the time. How many of us have only one running instance of our internal IT systems? We almost always have a development system and a production system and often a testing system. And one of the things that my QA folks always get on my case is I want the same bits that I'm testing against the test system to be the bits that we deploy and run on the production system. And now I can do that using the tags mechanism because I've defined two different services that had the same tag and letting the person installing it choose which one they want. So now we've seen how the thing is installed. What can the client application do inside with JavaScript? So right now there's three things that you can do. The first thing I can do is acquire a reference to the information about my connection. And as we discussed earlier, that includes the information about the service that I got connected to. I can perform proxied IO requests. And then the third thing I can do is I may know at the application level that the user's credentials on the service have been changed, and so I want to be able to programmatically trigger going back to the service or to the credentials configuration screen, ask the user to update their credentials. So these are the things I can do programmatically. For the first one, what you typically do in a Jive application is you define an onload handler to call a particular method. I usually use init for it because I'm an old Java servlet guy. So, and that's always the place you start, right? So in this particular case, I'm going to call jive.connects.getConnection for the alias named quotes. And then when I get control back, the function, my anonymous function here will receive the matching connection information. And it's typical to cache this the first time you load the application on a page. You don't have to. You can go back and get the information on every request, but that's just an extra wasted network trip. So I'm going to cache that in a global variable. Now, I should mention that your application itself effectively is running inside an iframe on the browser, so it doesn't have access to anything else, to other applications that are running on the page. And you also don't have to worry about name clashes with the Chrome of the standard Jive pages. You've got a nice isolated environment, so there's no issues with having global variables like this. And then the last line is the standard OpenSocial API to register my init method as the onload handler that will get executed after all of the resources on the page have been loaded. And you don't now have to worry about the fact that different browsers implement that a little bit differently each time and all of that. That's built into the standard OpenSocial capability of the register onload handler. Did I go backwards? The second thing I can do is perform the proxied I.O. requests. So remember, we're in the browser sandbox, and so normally I can only go back to the server where I got the JavaScript from. In this case, what I want to do is I want to be able to go call the real remote service, either on the cloud or behind my firewall someplace. So the connection object that we got back and that we cached on the previous page has six methods on it for the six different HTTP verbs that will typically get used. And I'm passing in as parameters the path that's going to get added onto the URL that was part of the service definition. I can optionally pass in request parameters that I want to add, and I can optionally pass in HTTP headers that need to be added to this particular request. So if you're talking, for instance, to a service that requires cookies, you can still do it if you need to. We didn't want to limit the HTTP level capabilities that you had. And then if you're doing a put or a post, you can also send the data in a string format. So if you've got JSON data, there's json.stringify or something like that to turn it into a string for you. And then what you get back from that, just as we saw with the osapi.http calls, is you get back a request object. And on that request object, there's an execute method that actually performs the request, and then you pass the execute method a callback function that is called when the request completes. So you'll either have the data that came back, you'll have the response headers, and so on. This is what it looks like in code. So I'm going to call the service to actually get me the outstanding quotes. And the service I'm talking to supports pagination. So I want to start at row 5 and limit my number of returned responses to 5. So I'm getting rows 5 through 9 out of the list of available quotations. So the get function returns us the request object that has an execute method on it. I pass in an anonymous function that receives the response, and then we follow the same pattern that OpenSocial does. If there was an HTTP error on this particular call, there will be a property named error on the response, and it will have a code field that tells you the HTTP status. It'll have a message field that'll tell you the error message that the server sent back. So the typical pattern then is if there was an error like that, then deal with it. If not, just deal with the response in the usual way. So does that make sense? It's pretty straightforward. So that callback, or the response object that I get back, has up to 5 fields in it. It's got the data, if there was any, for the response from the response body. It's got the error, if there was an error. It's got the response headers that came back from the server. And it's actually got the low-level XML HTTP request object if you need to get to it for something that we're not making easy access to. You'll have it available. So the last thing we can do in the application itself is we can trigger the need for reconfiguration, or in fact the initial configuration of the user's credentials. So this will happen the first time the user actually makes a request, or the application on behalf of the user makes a request to this particular connection. If we haven't collected the credentials yet, they'll get challenged for it. Or if we got a 401 back from the service itself because the service credentials changed, then we want to challenge the user to update their credentials in the credentials vault. So to trigger that, let's modify that previous example just a little bit and add in some handling for the response.error. If we got a 401 back, which is the standard HTTP status for unauthorized, then I want to call a method called reconfigure on the connection object. And this time, what's going to happen is we're going to go ask the user to reenter their credentials, and then we'll get control back in the application again. And what you'll typically do is resubmit the request that caused the failure. So there's some design patterns that we'll be documenting that make that really easy as we do examples on the developer portal at developer.jivesoftware.com. Right? And then the rest of the handling is as we saw before. So if the wireless is still up, let's actually run the demo and see if this actually works. Okay, so this is the admin console that on my particular desktop system that has a whole bunch of services defined. And we can see down at the bottom, it has the two entries for the quote system. And I can go edit one of them and see exactly what I put in and defined it. I can test the settings on this to make sure that it actually works. And I can go add additional HTTP headers if I need them. Or in my case, I know that this particular service doesn't need anything else, so we'll just save it and continue. So now we're going to switch our viewpoint to the user that's going to install this application. So what you start with is part of your user. What is in 4.0 and 4.5 is your user overview page now has some different options on it, and one of them is the apps dashboard. So I can have as many dashboards as I want. I can drag and drop where the applications show up on which dashboards they are. In this particular case, we're going to add an application. So you can't see it very well, but that's actually a link to the apps market. For developers, what we've been doing is we have a special developer app that lets us enter the where to go find the gadget.xml file. And in the SDK, we'll have something along this line for you during development so that you can just point at your local copy of the application. In a production world, the real user is actually going to see the marketplace. So I'm going to go erase my URL. Test my memory here. It's 8080. Where'd the install button go? So we see two things. We see that the application is requiring permission to access the connections that I've got, my own profile, the activity stream for events that I see within Jive, and the social groups that I'm a member of. And we also found both of those instances that matched on the tag that we took. So I'm going to pick the development one. Save it. And the app's configuration has now been saved. Scroll back over so we can see it. So the very first thing this particular application does is it wants to go gain access to that particular connection, but I haven't ever configured credentials for this user, for this application yet. So we actually did that path we saw with the check-in for the 401 and call the reconfigure method to get to this point. So I'm going to update my credentials, my as a user credentials for this particular application. And approve the application's use. And so now I'm HTML5, CSS, whatever the browser can do, and I've got access to information from my remote service. I've also got access to information from my Jive instance. So for example, go ahead and ask your question.
So you put your credentials into the credentials vault.
Right.
They're only there for you.
Right.
Okay. If I go in, I can't use your credentials.
No, you can't. So it's actually tied to the service and the user identity. Okay. So in this particular case, in my sales CRM system, I've got sales reps, and I know the Jive user ID of that person, so I can use the pop-up OXML tag, essentially, that pops up the Jive user profile. It's not very pretty yet because we're not done with it, but I wanted to just illustrate the concept that I can mash up data from the remote service to data from Jive, and I can mash up as many different services as I need to. So in this particular application, I can go forwards through the various quotes that are outstanding. And I can either approve or reject them. But before I do that, I might want to look at more information. Well, as you can see, it's fairly constrained in size, as we discussed before. So I've got an on-click handler on each of the quotes that will take me into Canvas view for that particular page. It takes a second because the wireless is not fast. That'll have more information about it. And again, I can go back. And so I'm just using the standard OpenSocial APIs to trigger switching between the views. But it's very, very handy. And then I can either approve or reject a particular quote. So a good application is probably going to be about this level of complexity. So imagine a single function environment that just lets me solve a problem that the user has, that they have to do this kind of thing every day without having to go switch into a new machine, log into another system, deal with a completely separate UI with its own characteristics. I can do this all from my applications page within Jive, which is a fairly powerful concept. So let's actually look at some of the code behind this. And along the way, feel free to ask any questions. Be happy to talk about it. So we saw this in the slides that my application is named Quotes Approval. I required the feature Jive Connects with the information about the service I wanted, and I required these other capabilities as well. OpenSocial 1.0 is the base OpenSocial APIs. Dynamic height lets me adjust the height of the window after I've retrieved data, because sometimes the amount of the physical height you need changes over time. So in the dashboard, we're constraining the width, but not the height. The application has control over that. And then here's the two views that I needed access to. The HTML for these pages is nothing to write home about. We include jQuery along with the APIs that are supported in the container, so I took advantage of that. And I followed the normal jQuery practices. You don't actually put the JavaScript decorations in the HTML page itself. We'll let that happen with some JavaScript that happens when the page loads. And then I'm going to use dynamic HTML generating capabilities of jQuery to actually populate the table body once I've gone and collected the data from the server. The majority of the JavaScript in this particular case is common to both of those, so I abstracted that off into a shared file. Let's actually start at the bottom for a second. So we're initializing by registering the init method that we saw before. So what init does, come here. When I switch views, I can actually pass data back and forth. I didn't mention that when we were doing the demo. So in this particular case, I'm keeping track of which page I'm on. So when you come into the page, there's an OpenSocial call called getParams, which lets me essentially get a JavaScript object with key value pairs of all the parameters that were sent from the previous view to this view. And then you can also need to deal with the case where there isn't any. And so I'm saying if I got the data and it has an index property, which is where I'm keeping track of how far in I am, I want to go ahead and save the parameters into a global params variable, which is defined up at the top. So if I don't receive any parameters, I'm going to set default values for it. If I do, got them from a previous view, these default values will get replaced. So this is all happening at page load time. Then the other thing that we do in init was enable handlers adds the jQuery magic event handlers to all of the places that need them. We'll look at that in a second. And then cache connection is the code that actually goes and gets the connection management information for me. So if you haven't played with jQuery, it's got some really interesting capabilities for adding event handlers. The one I really liked was this method called live. How many jQuery users are there here? Quite a few. Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. Live lets you define event handlers for DOM objects that don't exist yet. And so the approve is going to be an ID, it's going to be a CSS class that is assigned to that approve icon in every row of the table. So this lets me say, well, I don't care when this happens. I want jQuery to remember, just go ahead and add excuse me, add this method call whenever a click happens on that particular icon. And then I'm using a custom DOM element to record the index of this particular row in the table so that I can match it back up to the right quote when I want to do the update. And then the update method will do an IO call back through Jive Connect's API to actually update the quote on the server and give it back to me. So we're just defining all of those event handlers. And then the caching is, as we saw in the slides, I want to just store the connection that I received. But also, when I've received that, now I know how to actually go get the data itself. So I'm going to call load data at that point. This is going to be the place where we actually trigger talking to the connection for the first time. So we'll scroll down there. So you might have seen as it's going and doing the call, you saw it say I was getting access at offset 5 or at offset 0. So I'm actually replacing the HTML dynamically before I make the call. Then I'm making the call itself. Here's the case where we're checking for the 401, as we saw before, and triggering the reconfiguration of the credentials if need be, and then resubmitting load data again. So this pattern works out nicely to resubmit the same call again if I need to. And then if I'm kind of bailing, that's not real professional, but hey, it's a demo of any other sort of a HTML or HTTP error that I get. If I got data itself, then response.data, because we're using JSON in this particular service, is very nicely parsed for me into a JavaScript object. So it is an array of quote objects that match whatever my server sent. And then I'm going to use that information to populate all the rows in the table, the typical way you do it in dynamic HTML, and then store that as the content of the table body element. So not a lot to it. It's very simple to write these things, and it's very simple to gain access to any number of services. So are there any questions about the code before we head on?
So the update uses the same load data
source. I should show you that, yeah. So in the case of update, my service is defined that I need to do a put. So the URL is slash quote slash the ID of the quote. So it's each quote is a JavaScript object, so I just pull the ID out of that. Tell it that it's application slash JSON for the content type. And then it's just stringify turns that JSON or JavaScript object back into a string for me in JSON format. And then when I execute it, my callback function is just going to load the table data again. So in the previous case, we did a get. This time, we're doing a put. Okay, just a couple of quick comments about things that are on our thinking roadmap that we can add as we've got a few months before we ship Jive 5. One is the idea of OAuth for these proxied connections. So how many of you work for companies that have internal enterprise apps? What authentication schemes are typically used? Because one of the reasons we're here is to get this kind of feedback to know how to prioritize these things. So I imagine HTTP Basic happens in some cases. How about SSL certificates? Do you have a few systems that require that? Do you have any enterprise systems that require OAuth right now? It's probably a little early, but certainly we'll need OAuth to be able to connect to some of the external things, like Twitter is only OAuth now. As an example, I think we'll see that trend continue. So that's something we need to build into the connection mechanisms. So again, that you don't have to worry about that three-legged handshake that OAuth requires. And you don't need to worry about adding the token to every request. The Jive Connect's API will do that for you. How many of the enterprise systems that you have use SOAP? How about REST? A few? Okay. So REST is already pretty easy. Because the low-level JavaScript stuff does a lot of the work. There's a lot of ceremony in calling SOAP APIs. Quite often there's a login, and then I have to add something in SOAP headers or something like that. Wouldn't it be nice if we could take some of that ceremony off the application developer's hands? And we're looking at ways to do that, to make writing SOAP not such a painful experience. And then taking that principle one further, we can look at other APIs like CMIS for content management systems. Very nice, and I can use either the REST version of it or the SOAP version of it. But we can look at ways to make it still simpler by simplifying the set of calls for the 80-20 functions, the 80% of things that you do a lot. Can be made a little bit simpler than the fairly complicated objects that you have to send back and forth with CMIS. So what you'll see coming over time is the additional ease of use, additional capabilities of Jive Connects to make our jobs as application developers that much easier to talk to these remote systems. So with that, just to summarize what we've learned, the Jive Connects API is basically about unlocking enterprise systems and cloud systems. You have access to either internal or external web services, internal to your enterprise or cloud services. We're isolating the developer from having to worry about service URLs and things like that. We're insulating the application developer from having to deal with collecting credentials for the users, and they're being stored in a secure location within your Jive instance. And then we see that the user experience of actually installing your application is fairly straightforward and painless. Because that's been our objective as part of the overall Jive application framework. So with that, we've got time for questions, or we can go get refills.
The authentication. So usually if the app is related to what's actually happening in Jive, I'm expecting a lot of people may just want to use whatever the SSO mechanism that they may already have. Are you planning to support SSO directly, or do you expect us to? The other option I was thinking, maybe we have to expose a service that actually does the SSO.
Yeah, so the question is around supporting an SSO scenario. So I'm assuming you've already got SSO between your Jive instance and the enterprise service that you're talking to. We haven't done that yet, but that certainly makes a lot of sense because the web service call from the client browser into Jive Connect is already authenticated with your Jive identity. So just passing that on makes a lot of sense.
We're making some investments for 5.0 for native SSO support in the product itself. So that's sort of all under the same umbrella, and we're trying to sort of flesh that out right now. So to the extent that you guys have input on which systems you'd like to see supported as part of an SSO regime, you know, be it SiteMinder, SAML 2, Kerberos, what have you, I'm a product manager, so let me know. Yes.
Okay. All of the above.
Good, because those are the ones I'm thinking of.
So the question is, do the REST calls return JSON or Twitter or JSON or XML? That depends on what your service actually returns and then what accept header you send along with it. There's a lot of services that support both will ask you, send the accept header to say what you prefer or what you accept. And then the server will pick the one that has got the highest priority that it knows how to serve for you. For Jive core APIs, it's just JSON. Yeah, it's easier to work with. There's a question here.
The credentials are the same for everybody in our organization.
So the scenario, what about a scenario where the corporation has a subscription to a service and that you would want to pass those credentials on every single request for every single user? So from the perspective of Jive Connect, you would call that an anonymous service and then build it into the headers and the request URL, depending on how the service wants that stuff sent. So that from the service's viewpoint, it's getting credentials for the company, but the user doesn't have to deal with their credentials challenge because Jive Connects doesn't think you need any credentials. Does that make sense? It's hidden away. So inside of Jive, of course, we have to store credentials for a variety of systems. Whenever there's an integration with something like SharePoint using the SharePoint connector, there's stored away inside the Jive database those credentials. And they're stored in an encrypted format with an encryption key that is different for every Jive instance. So even if you look at a database dump from somebody else, you can't decrypt them yourself. And they're stored in a way that has no access from any web service APIs. So there's no way to even break into Jive and get that information from an application. Does that answer the question, or was the... So the question is on WS security and X509. So that's where we haven't gotten to yet. So you saw on my list was as part of the SOAP support for SSL client certificates. And what that really covers is we need to understand from developers and IT departments what support do you need. And so we can make sure that we build the right stuff in. Saw a question in the back. What was there? If not, I think we're done. Thank you very much, and thank you. I hope you had a good time at Dive Course.